Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF, and it is now time for Greenside Up. We have one of our agents in studio already. We have Jesse. And Jesse, good morning. How are you doing today?
I am doing pretty good. Little cold. The wintry mix is a little bit hard to deal with.
Right. Yeah. I know you said you came from Pittsburgh this morning and that it was snowing over there already. And it looks like we were looking at the radar together just a second ago, and it's still rain here in Coffeyville. But it's slowly pushing this way, talking about 1 to 2 inches. So hopefully after the show, you have a safe drive back to Pittsburgh, as it looks like it's gotten kind of heavier over in that area. So
something to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, as Wendy is supposed to be in with us here in a little bit, but she has not been in studio yet. So we will go ahead and start along. And you were have a couple of programs you were wanting to talk about. And the first one is a citizen science.
Yes. So the university partners with area seed companies and transplant producers in order to receive free pepper and tomato transplants, as well as sweet corn and summer squash seeds. And what they have done is they have worked out a way to get these out to the general public for free. In exchange for observations on their growth and basic quality of the plants during the growing season. So citizen science asks for observations tracked by members of the general public, be that a community garden or a residential gardener, in exchange for these plants. The tomato and pepper transplants have a little bit more of a involved tracking process than the sweet corn and summer squash varieties do. We have 60 tomato plants and 72 pepper plants available for the public. The one thing that we need to keep in mind with the program is that at least half of those tomato plants or half of those pepper plants need to go in one single garden so that you can more easily track the differences between the different cultivars in the growing season.
So, and when does that program begin yet?
That's a great question. So we need to have anyone interested in the program email me at jr637@ksu.edu before March 1st so that they can know how many pepper and tomato plants they need to get out to the public. We've already had one community garden partner with us for sweet corn and summer squash seeds, but we have had no one interested in taking tomato or pepper transplants yet. So if you're interested in that, that would be a good way to get plants for the growing season.
And you said you need to basically like register before March 1st, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so plenty of time still to do it, but probably want to register the sooner the better, obviously. That way you can that way there's no rush to get in at the last second.
Yep. So,
and there is another program that is going on right now, or well, not right now, but that is upcoming. And could you go ahead and tell us that one? I was writing it down earlier and I forgot to complete it when I was writing it down because
sure.
I was doing something else real quick.
Sure. So the Kansas Forest Service is part of the Kansas State Nursery. They're in Manhattan, and every year they do what is known as the Seedling Conservation Program. They have seedlings produced of many, many different species of native plants that can be used in conservation practices. So in riparian buffers, which is like waterway, or the land right adjacent to waterways through properties, as windbreaks for livestock or your home or the farm, as a woodlot, as a wildlife stand, stuff like that. And so you get these cheap seedlings that you plant for the conservation. And what I like about the program is they are cheap. It's $25 for a pack of 25 seedlings.
It's not bad at all.
No. Plus a little bit of shipping, or if you can pick them up in Manhattan, cheaper for pickup. And the second thing is that a lot of the species have horticultural value in addition to conservation value. There's about 30 species of plants that are edible or can be consumed by people. And pairing up a conservation practice with a food production practice is something that I'm very interested in advocating throughout the district.
So they end that's any time, correct? You can go get those at any time, right? There's not like a certain timetable on this one.
So they actually do two sales during the year. The first is in the fall, which starts in September and ends in November. And then the second is their spring sale, which starts in December and ends May 1st.
Okay.
So the earlier you get in, the better. Missouri has a similar program with their state nursery. They have actually more species than Kansas, but they sold out of most of their species within the first 3 weeks of their program.
Good grief. So, people are after it over there.
Yeah, you're likely going to be able to find more plants at the Kansas nursery this year, but ordering from either is a very viable option, especially for people in southeastern Kansas. And I know we have some listeners in Missouri, too. So I would definitely look for your state nursery's seedling program, because I know Oklahoma has one, too. I have not looked into Arkansas yet, but I'm fairly confident that they also have one.
Right. And obviously, we have listeners in the four states. So that's very good for especially if you're near the border of each state. I mean, it's not going to be too far for either one. So you can say you can go up to actually Manhattan and, you know, get those. But you can also order them over the phone, I'm guessing, or online, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so most of the things you can order from Kansas's program are native to Kansas. You will see a lot of crossover for natives in Missouri, Oklahoma, and Arkansas, too. 25 seedlings for $25. Those are bare root seedlings, so they're not going to come in any soil. Storing those, if you order them and have them shipped to you early before they can be put in the ground, is a little bit different from storing containerized seedlings, which the Kansas Forest Service also offers, but for $55 for 25 instead of 25 for 25. They have also started a couple of bundles of different species this year. There are two bundles for wildlife stands, specifically quail and pheasant, and then they have two pollinator bundles for the state, one for the eastern region of Kansas and one for the western region of Kansas. The western region is going to be more acclimated to drier conditions, can withstand drought a lot more. The eastern region can handle wetter conditions better, and for our region, obviously, you're going to want the eastern pollinator bundle.
I mean, because Kansas is exactly like Oklahoma in this sense. Right in Oklahoma City, there's like a break. The west half of the state is the drier, more not desert, but it's the drier area, while the east is the wetter area. And it's the same thing in Kansas, where it's almost like right down the middle. The eastern half of the state is the wetter part, and the western half of the state is the drier part. So, with the exception of snow that they get a lot in the west, but it's interesting how both states kind of just split in the middle. And like you said, obviously you want to get the seeds that are more acclimated to the wetter areas, like here in southeast Kansas.
Yeah, definitely, because there are plants in that bundle that will drown if they have too much water, or the western bundle that will drown if they have too much water,
right? So, because it's not acclimated to that particular area. So that'd be like trying to plant a palm tree here. It would probably drown pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because too much rain on it. All right. We're speaking with Jesse here from the K-State Extension Office in Pittsburgh. We were going to have Wendy Powell on today. Unfortunately, she is not here right now. So what we're going to do, we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we'll have more with Jesse. We have some news coming up here at the top of the hour. You are listening to Greenside Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Green Side Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High in studio with you. Also with me from the K-State Extension office in Pittsburgh, we have Jesse. Welcome back to the second part of the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Lots of stuff you wanted to talk about for the second part of the show. And one of the first things you were talking about, that these two terms are kind of being used interchangeably, but they're not the same. And that is variety and cultivars.
Yes. So in our citizen science program, we offer 10 different cultivars of tomatoes and I think 12 different cultivars of peppers between bell peppers and chili peppers. And I know that for me, it took me a while to understand the difference between the two words. A lot of people use it interchangeably, thinking that they mean the same thing. Not quite the case. And while there are subtle differences between the words, it changes what kind of plants you should expect when you're buying new plants. A variety is can also be called a subspecies. It's a taxonomical rank, and usually this describes a binary on or off trait that you would see in nature. For example, there is a variety of honey locust that has no thorns. So that's it either has thorns or no thorns characteristic, and you would see that in nature. When it comes to varieties, the trait is common enough to where the trait will be passed down in seeds almost all of the time. Obviously, there's a little bit of genetic mutation that might happen to where you might still get thorns on a honey locust from the seeds of a thornless plant. But usually, in varieties, you will be able to buy seeds and have the same characteristics as the parent plant. On the other hand, cultivars are plants selected by breeders for a non-binary characteristic. This could be color, yield if it's a fruit or vegetable, size or shape, and these will typically not be true to type in seeds. You will see a lot of variation in these characteristics between parent and offspring. So for that reason, these plants usually have to be vegetatively propagated through cuttings or grafting or other vegetative propagation techniques.
So so the different, I mean, like you said, it's used interchangeably, but they're not the same thing. There's different little differences to them, though. Like you said, one is, you know, seeds go out and they basically recreate the same thing. The other one is kind of done by breeders to make it go a certain look a certain way. Correct.
Mm-hmm. And plants can have both a variety and a cultivar. As I mentioned before, there are honey locusts without thorns. That is a taxonomical variety. But then, in addition to that, breeders have also chosen particular thornless honey locusts, for example, leaf color in the fall. There's a cultivar called Sunburst Honey Locust, which is that thornless variety, but also has the non-binary characteristic of fall color that was selected because it was more marketable. So you will see both on occasion. When it comes to horticultural plants, especially fruits and vegetables, for the most part, you're going to see cultivars and not varieties.
Okay, so that is the difference between variety and cultivars. The few other things you want to talk about was the 4-H in schools for the citizen science program.
Yes. So as mentioned before the break, the citizen science program is currently taking volunteers. Because it's a really good introduction to experimental design, it's very useful for teachers or 4-H volunteers who want to introduce their kids to STEM education and kind of the basic research methodology while still growing food for their club or their school. So we're really looking for partnerships with 4-H clubs or schools in our district. There are other counties that can approach their extension agents in order to participate in the program. I am responsible for Crawford, Montgomery, Labette, and Wilson counties. So if any 4-H clubs or schools in those four counties want to participate in the program, they would email me.
Okay, and what is your email address again? That way they can get a hold of you?
Sure. jr637@ksu.edu.
Okay, so if you're wanting to participate in that program, go ahead and shoot Jesse an email, and he will be able to help you out for that. Coming up is Valentine's Day, so a big thing always on Valentine's Day for guys is to get their girls, roses, any kind of flowers. We want to make sure those flowers last as long as possible. So could you give us maybe some tips on how to take care of cut flowers? Because again, they're going to at some point go, they're going to die anyway. But we want to make sure they last as long as possible and look as beautiful as possible for a long time.
Definitely. So the care tips are a little different depending on whether or not you have a bundle of flowers in an arrangement or if you have loose flowers. For floral arrangements, you want to keep the vase filled with warm water. It should not be cold. Warm keeps them alive longer, and you should add fresh warm water daily. If the water gets cloudy, replace it immediately. If possible, you should recut the stems by removing 1 to 2 inches with a sharp knife, and when you do this, if possible, do this underwater so that when cut, they take in water and not air. The flowers should be kept in a cool spot, about 65 to 72 degrees Fahrenheit, and away from direct sunlight, which adds unnecessary heat to it. Once they are off of the bush or vine or whatever they are growing on, they don't need to photosynthesize anymore, and photosynthesis will just add to the decay of the plant mm-hmm. and make them wilt faster. If a rose starts to wilt, remove it from the arrangement and recut the stem underwater. Submerge the entire rose in warm water, and the rose should revive in 1 to 2 hours. For loose stems, if you can't get them a food solution, which is typically added to the water in a vase for both flower arrangements and for loose stems, keep it in a cool place, similar to with floral arrangements. Usually when you buy the flowers from a florist, they will include fertilizer to go in the water specifically for cut flowers. Add that as soon as you get them into water. Remove the leaves that fall below the water line. If they are in the water, they will provide bacterial growth, which will make them decay faster.
Right.
You want to keep them away from bacteria. And recut the stems with a sharp knife and place the flowers in the solution. So pretty similar, but slightly different based on whether or not it's in an arrangement or loose.
And cutting the bottoms off, that's because they can get clogged, right? And mm-hmm. then fresh water cannot get through. So you're basically just kind of reopening that yeah. waterway, correct?
So when plants are cut, they form what is kind of similar to scabs in mm-hmm. people in order to keep moisture from flowing out and nutrients from basically leaching away into the open air from the wound. Cutting that again and again will form an opening which will allow the water to go up into the rose and whatever nutrients are in the water. So if you add that solution, that's how the nutrients get into the flower and keep it alive longer.
And how often does that usually happen where it kind of, for lack of a better word, scabs back over? Is it just with basically every day probably need to do that? Or
yeah. Yeah, it takes about 12 hours for that wound to not necessarily heal, but stop getting worse for plants. So it would need to be a daily thing. Not necessarily any more than that, because eventually you're going to run out of stem to cut off.
You just have just the petal itself at some point
mm-hmm,
if
yeah.
you keep chopping at it.
1 inch is fine. You don't really need to take off more than that unless you have a vase that the flowers are too long in and need to cut down on the size. But if you go through a florist, they should be able to cut the flowers to where it fits the vase that you're trying to get.
That way it's perfect. Another thing you wanted to talk about, and I know my handwriting sometimes is horrible, but you wanted to talk about fruit trees and tips, pruning fruit trees and other kinds of tips.
Yep. So we are getting close to the time where you want to prune your fruit trees for the spring. Most pruning takes place in the winter season when the tree is dormant. You don't want to prune when the wood is frozen, but as soon as the temperatures warm up to the point where the wood would not be frozen, you want to cut back on branches. There are some different pruning techniques depending on what fruit you're trying to prune, but there are some general recommendations for all fruit trees too. The first is probably the most obvious one. You want to take out any broken or diseased branches. That way the disease does not spread to the rest of the tree. If two branches are rubbing against one another, you need to take one of them out so that they don't create open wounds where disease can enter into the plant. There are suckers that form on a few particular species of fruit trees, like apples. Suckers are branches that point straight up in the air. These will not be productive branches, and taking them out allows for the tree to send resources to more productive parts of the tree. It also gives the fruit tree a better shape and really just makes it look better in the landscape compared to all of these random branches pointing straight up in the air.
It's more aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm. So you also need to, well, you don't need to. It depends on how large you want the tree to get, but pruning for reduction in size, keeping in mind the general size of the tree and how much time and energy you have to devote to harvest. If you don't want the tree to get as big as it would get, you would reduce the size of the entire canopy, cutting back to the to a main branch. So you would remove extras up to a fork, and that fork allows for a cleaner wound recovery. Specifically for peaches and nectarines, you need more pruning for those trees than other fruit trees because they produce on last year's growth. So if you fail to prune for 1 year or two, the harvest for peaches and nectarines will start getting farther and farther out from the center of the tree. And with enough peaches and nectarines on the tree, limbs will start to break as the weight starts getting farther from the support.
Right.
So a more vigorous pruning system for peaches and nectarines is required.
So basically, like you said, you don't want to prune when it's frozen. So tomorrow's probably not the best day.
Yeah, no.
To be pruning, or today if you're a little further north like it is right now, it's where it's snowing and stuff. Probably not the best time to prune. So
right, beginning of March, middle of March is about the right time to start pruning before they really start budding out.
Mm-hmm.
But when the temperatures are warm enough that it won't damage the tree. When you prune the tree, wounds heal faster if they are left alone instead of being treated with wax or something like that. When you do prune, you want to make sure you prune on drier days so that the chance of disease is less likely.
Right. So basically give the tree a let the tree basically kind of heal itself pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
You said some people, I guess, put wax on it to try to help the tree. But again, it's best off to let it heal itself, correct?
Yeah. So they seal it in order to keep potential disease from entering the tree. But the wounds, trees are kind of remarkable in how they compartmentalize wounds to keep disease from entering the rest of the tree. So they have a lot of natural systems to keep disease out on their own. And if you let that wound heal on its own, it's likely going to be fine.
All right. Well, Jesse, I appreciate you coming in today. First time doing the show by yourself. So but you brought a lot of great information today that everybody can listen to. You can also listen to the show back on demand. It'll be on our website. So you can go ahead and check that out a little bit later if you missed any of today's show. So, Jesse, I thank you very much for coming in today, man.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have open line. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.